settle in, get comfortable, and let our journey begin as we meet the hosts, internationally acclaimed mediums, Nick and Sylvie Avery.
Avery, and welcome to Spirits Work, the metaphysical and paranormal spiritual information show that's designed to stretch your mind and help you to think outside of the box. On today's show, as usual, my husband Mick will be deep trance channeling, and with the aid of our spirit friends, we are going to be finding out about hypnosis and regression. And if you'd like to join us with a question related to our subject, the phone lines will be open and we'd love to hear from you. The number to call in the U.S. is 877-876-5227, and Canada is 888-810-8322.
Hi, I'm Mick Avery. As well as Spirits Work, here on bbsradio.com on Mondays at 7 p.m. PST and Thursdays at 1 p.m. PST, we have another radio show, which is Spirit Teaching, on artistfirst.com every Tuesday at 7 p.m. PST. If you'd like to know more about us, our books, CDs, or have an Akashic reading, please go to our website, which is www.spirit-teaching.com. As Sylvie said, I am a deep trance medium, and each week, live on the show, I channel Gregory Hay, who had an earth life 300 years ago. I have the ability to completely hand over my body to the spirit world so they may use it to speak through, and I know absolutely nothing about what has happened during this time. When I go into the deep trance state, my conscious mind and my spirit are transported elsewhere by the spirit team who work with us, and then they bring me back safe and sound when Gregory leaves. I not only miss the whole show, but I very rarely remember where it was they took me either. But sometimes I do, and that's my job, I suppose. And without anything else to say, because time is precious, I'll hand you back to Sylvie and have a great show.
Thanks, Mick. Yes, just tell you a little bit about Gregory. He is the spokesperson for a group of spirits of higher intelligence called the White Cloud Group. They consist of many great minds, as well as regular people, and between them they have access to vast knowledge and insight. They've come to bring their teachings because there is a need for us to gain an understanding beyond the constraint of our human minds. The subject matter we cover is limitless, and hopefully it will help you to become more knowledgeable and better informed as to the nature of your existence on Earth, as well as your continued life after physical death. We do not have any religious bias or political persuasion, and our mission is only to bring truthful information and knowledge through our gifts of spirit. And if anybody has an idea for a show topic that they'd like us to cover on one of our Monday or Thursday shows, and incidentally our Thursday shows will be going live as from week after next, please do send us Your idea. You know, I mean, really, we have a little list here and we do go through it. We do look at every email that comes in with suggestions. So please do email us. Look at our website. It's spirit-teaching.com, or you can just email us at enq@spirit-teaching.com. Okay. I do believe Gregory's here.
Hello, dear friend.
Hello.
With love and light, as always.
Thank you. Thank you. Wonderful. So today we're going to be taking a walk through hypnosis and regression. And I believe that you'd like to start with a scientific approach, is that right? And you know, an analysis of
Well, yes, quite so. So really, then, the whole situation had developed during Victorian times toward hypnosis and regression, that is, regression of the this life that you have now, really as a way of helping to travel back in time to the childhood of a person to try to gain some sense and awareness of what difficulties lay within that pathway, what perhaps buried situations and scenarios that the present mind and consciousness had subdued in some way because of, usually really because of distraught situations or situations of violence or abuse in some way, or perhaps it was due to some personality disorder or trait or psychological disadvantage that the patient may have had and was exhibiting some form of distress or odd adult behavior, and that this was really a way of finding out the root causes of these different forms of behavior. That has always been the distinct marker, I suppose, of psychiatric evaluation of the time, and has continued to be an ever-growing science on your side of life. And indeed, many of the aspects of it we continue to use in the spirit world because of different forms of regression, which are quite obviously have advantages for the patient to try to bring certain clues and vagaries about their life, which they, as I say, have subdued for some reason, either in a conscious or subconscious way.
What, you use a type of hypnosis?
Well, not really hypnosis, but we certainly use evaluation, and in a very caring way, we take different beings who may be troubled by their own life experiences in physical life through different ways of psychological evaluation to help them to come to terms with certain aspects of their life. Perhaps, after all, something, event happened because of a lack of duty of care or something like that. Or perhaps it was an actual physical situation that was brought to them. Perhaps they were abused or something like that. Do not forget, then, that for many people, if they have been abused in the physical side of life and then they come to the spirit world, we have to still recover that problem if it is that being has not had the recovery process done for them in the physical reality. So it is something which is ongoing.
So are you saying that you feel that in that situation of abuse, for instance, that it is a good idea to uncover that and not gloss over that if it's not affecting the person?
It depends, of course. I can understand a reluctance, perhaps, for some people to want to uncover certain situations. However, if the truth has been buried with the activity, and that it is a truth, perhaps, that the individual really does need to face for whatever reason, perhaps it may be to actually evict that situation from them. Because some people may have it locked in themselves for years. Not necessarily saying that we want everyone to bring out their difficulties or whatever, but in some situations it is very necessary for their well-being and for them to continue in their life journey. And also I would have to say, for many who have existed in physical life, they bring about a great deal of baggage with them to the spirit world, which all has to be laid out. And sometimes those now spirit beings have to have help in doing that.
What about false memories? People who feel that this happened,
Yes.
And that sort of thing. I mean, how about this situation?
Well, false memories, of course, can often be perhaps placed because of different outside energies and interferences. This is not regarding that children perhaps always will have false memories of abuse, but most certainly, psychologically, you have to be very careful with a child when unearthing situations of abuse not to actually put words, thoughts, or feelings into the mind, because the mind is a very clever operative. It is something which can bring situations and scenarios in absolute clarity, even if they didn't happen, to the physical being. You understand that this is the illumination of the mind, and sometimes it will be not necessarily that the child has actually gone through such a situation, but perhaps they may have seen it, read about it, heard it on the television set in some other form of media, perhaps radio, all different kinds of news reports that you have on your side of life bring about this twinning, I suppose, a form of a collection of this information. Even though it may not actually be remembered by the child, it is held subliminally within the within the subconscious and sometimes in the conscious section.
And asked if they remember, if they forgot this.
Yes.
Do you remember anything?
Yes. Well, yes, quite exactly. You see, they're, in a sense, very leading questions, which is actually why some aspects of science and the science of psychology is actually quite vague, and people are perhaps always evolving the practice. The point is that you will have at certain stages of psychiatric development when it was felt that it was good to have this form of practice, you understand, bringing everything to the surface and being very suggestive about it, perhaps particularly if it is a subject who has been criminally abused in some way and therefore is coached by certain operatives who want to bring about a certain evaluation or story which will help to validate other possible prosecutions toward a certain individual.
Mm-hmm.
This is something as well which can sometimes be very helpful to the child and actually recover truths within that life, and at other times can uncover complete fabrications, perhaps even the child being coached by parents within that situation to cover some other vagary of their life.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so this really is then beginning to depict exactly how the brain, the physical brain of a human being, can pick up information and cite it as being of their own personality, of actually bringing about, and I'm not doing this in order to become, to raise skeptical beings of all of those who may be listening, or to raise their heckles either.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a truth. This is actually the way it is. And if you are going to be scientific about the approach of any evaluation of foresight of the individual's life story or history, be it either in the physical world or in the spirit world, you need to take great care in how you phrase certain situations and questions, not to be leading about what you want them to recover. A psychological exam over a person's understanding of their own life experience, perhaps particularly when they have been a child and they are an adult now, regurgitating these experiences is a very difficult process, an extremely delicate process, and it needs to be conducted by someone who is extraordinarily adept at psychological evaluation and understanding of exactly how to put things, not to put things, in a person's mind. And all such sessions are very carefully recorded, of course, and evaluated by other professionals of the same class. That is the point, that this is something which is most rigorous, as any scientific practice should be.
Yes, I mean, you know, people may be thinking, well, that's the reason, surely. But it's not that obvious. The questions that you're talking about aren't that obvious, are they? They're not blatant questions.
No.
Leading, you know, it's like I was reading about a case where a child was asked, when, where did your daddy used to touch you when he bathed you when you were little? Well, you know, I mean, if you were having a bath, it's a leading question, isn't it? It's planting something in the child's mind, isn't it?
Yes.
Don't you think?
Yes, absolutely so. It is really being suggestive to that child that some aspect of her beloved daddy's behavior was perhaps errant or was mischievous, was abusive in some way.
Yes, absolutely. And there's plenty of things like that that go on.
Yes, of course. And of course, that isn't to say that this means that all other stories of a similar situation are then erased from the map.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, they are not. They are all a part of this cycle. But it really means that it is really, I suppose, a situation of the expertise and the care of the psychological evaluation that it is not predatory, but that it is something which communicates and allows the child or the person, the individual, to actually really recall their own memories. Memories do not necessarily come flooding out, you see. That is the point, really, that sometimes these memories can be locked and blocked by so many difficult energies because of the difficulty that the child may have of remembrance. Or because as an adult, perhaps, it is difficult for them to actually come to admit some form of abuse. Many feel that it perhaps goes against their own religious understanding or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to appear to be soiled in that way. Quite understandably, of course.
As a child, I've heard that the brain doesn't actually mature enough until a certain age, for it to be able to, for you to be able to go back that far with the child. Is that possible?
Well, that is. Yes. Yes, absolutely so. Many children do not actually remember very much below the age of perhaps 2.5, even.
Mm-hmm. And is that
something? And the memories are extremely vague. There is a real reason for this. It is because the synapses in the brain have not actually been joined. There are no electrical connections to make that connectivity of consciousness. So, therefore, you may actually have an experience and watch and view a child as it is doing this or that. Yes, it is mouthing sentences and that kind of thing. And this is actually the beginning, the joining of the different electrical interface aspects of the child's brain, of your brain. That is how it all works. And that is something which is scientifically proven. So there, that is the premise that you have to go from if you are trying to bring about any form of evaluation and understanding over this matter of either hypnosis of a child in this state to bring about these latent fears and these possible scenarios in the earlier life, or even perhaps beyond that, to try to move beyond that. What you actually have to do is to connect with the spirit of the individual. And that, of course, is a completely different thing, a completely different evolutionary practice.
There's things like traumatic experiences that can make somebody forget things. Maybe somebody's rendered unconscious at the time of the trauma or something like that.
Yes.
Is brain damaged or just too young to make it necessary neural connections, really.
Yes, in which case, of course, the information is actually lost.
Yes.
And that is an obvious difficulty because although it may well be that just because, for example, a person is blind, it doesn't necessarily mean to say that they do not sense or are aware of their surroundings. But if they are unconscious at the time, then there is very little that you can do about that situation of what actually happened unless it was that you can make contact with their spirit. And that, of course, is a different situation altogether.
If somebody was blind and this happened to them and they lost their memory and that sort of thing, and they would they still have visions in colour in their mind?
If they had been at a time in their life, if they had been clear-sighted,
mm-hmm. Oh, right.
Then they would also dream in colour. Mm-hmm. It is understandable that the difficulty arises for human beings, particularly if they have never had sight, then what is it that they are going to dream?
Well, yes, exactly. This is the whole thing. This is the whole sort of fantasy world of the mind that we are trying to explore. I
yes.
have no idea how this works.
Yes, and actually what they dream and experience, perhaps for some, not for all, but for some, is that they will have dreams in sensing. And this is because sensing is a part of their world. So they will experience sounds. They will experience tactile sensations which have been perhaps transferred to the mind, to the brain. And with the consciousness, what happens is that it puts all of those parts back together again, which, as I say, is a complete understanding and an undertaking of exactly how connected the consciousness can be, in that it is possible for the consciousness to fabricate shapes and an understanding, even of a situation that you have not seen, to become clear within the consciousness through recall, even if you have not been through that situation. So there becomes a very great difficulty of what do you do then with the information that you think you are having and you think you are receiving, either from dreams or from experiences that you may have of a spiritual value. What are you actually looking at and observing and experiencing? In the cold light of day, are you actually experiencing things for yourself, or are you doing what is scientifically plausible and relaying convolutions of the synapse activity in your actual physical brain, which allows you to put together pictures of this, the way that it is in your possible life, but not has been in your actual life, in the physical state. And that, I suppose, is the great confusion, the great mystery, if you'd like, between what is of the physical dimension and what truly is of the etheric world. For some people, we can see that there is a very smudgy line between what is scientific fact and what is pseudo-scientific. For the realm of explanation of different forms of therapy and how these actually may plausibly make a distinct mark upon the consciousness, but may not be actual. They may just be very vague. And that what you are really doing is trying to define coloration, trying to define clarity through all of this murky world of the subconscious state. So my point here really is not to rubbish anything, but to say to all of those who may be listening that there has to be a matter of fact to be drawn into the whole situation of the sequence of events when bringing about a psychological advancement of what it is actually that is taking place, not what is mythically taking place, but what is factual.
Gregory, I have to ask you about stage hypnosis. Can you tell me what happens there? You know, when people hypnotize people and they go on stage and they behave like they're a chicken or an alien, or and they take their clothes off and they get them to do all these ridiculous things.
Yes. It is all through autosuggestion.
How do they do that? I mean, I know how it says that they do it, that they try to get these people to do it ordinarily, and then the ones that do it and can make a good job of it, then they keep them and they filter out the ones that don't. And then the ones that are left, they hypnotize.
Yes.
Because if they'll do it anyway, they'll do it when they're in a hypnotized state.
Yes,
if quite. You know what I mean.
Yes, absolutely so.
I've heard that.
So much of it is, as you say, on your side of life, a put-up job, yes.
Well, yes, but...
It still shows, though, that there is a, not a weakness, but a leaning toward suggestive behavior. Autosuggestion being brought upon them to actually say, well, if you do this, you will become a gravity of some form of success.
Mm-hmm.
That really is the advancement of that form of scientific behavior, of that explanation of scientific behavior, that what you are looking at is actually people performing like puppets because they want to. And that is really what I was talking about before. You see, some people have, I wouldn't say that it is a weakness in the consciousness, but most certainly that many people may well be prone to suggestive remarks and alterations to their subconscious strata of what they feel is all right to do in their physical walk of life. And so they bring about this behavior because it has been suggested that it is good for them to do.
I have an email came in from Ursa earlier on. Listener. Thank you, Ursa.
Thank you, friend.
If a person has a premise in the mind about the whys and wherefores of their problems, will that affect what is in the subconscious? Or is it inevitable that what is in the subconscious is the true representation?
It is not inevitable that what is in the true subconscious is definitely fact. It may well have been stored there from a preconception of what events took place. It is not necessarily a true pictorial list of what events took place. In fact, I would have to say that particularly if some of it was suggested and the altercation was proven that to be of a positive effect, then most certainly it will be that the subconscious storage of such information will be as though it is fact. So there you have it then. It is really about whether a person is suggestive in the autosuggestive way. And so you have this problem of, first of all, discerning the form of character that you are going to deal with if you are scientifically appraising their psychological state. You have to work out whether they are going to be receptive to this form of probing, mm-hmm. perhaps, within their consciousness, and whether they are actually going to be able to deliver truthful statements, or whether much of it has been brought about by intensely modified information.
She says, can certain things in the conscious mind be strong enough to keep what is in the subconscious locked out?
Well, now, that is also an issue, of course. Particularly, I would have to say, for some people with strong, deeply held religious beliefs and that kind of thing, it may well be that the true subconscious subject, if you like, of information which actually took place in physical life or as a part, formed a part of the subconscious memory, is actually locked out by the conscious understanding of the present day. So you may have someone who was perhaps abused in some way during their childhood or their teenage years or something like that, or some other awful thing befell them in those years, and that actually was then locked away in their subconscious mind because of present day situations. As I say, many religious groups may well, and I'm not citing this as being because I have a problem with religious groups, but just saying that for some people, it may be something which is suppressed within that form of thought, perhaps because of a certain line of theocracy or indoctrination, which perhaps has some, how can I say this, which has some kind of evaluation about the sort of information that you may be holding within your subconscious mind, which is then felt as being of a tainted person. So therefore, you may be perhaps cast out of that group because of the things that you actually went through in your physical life. For example, like in some classes or sections of society, because they have perhaps been raped as a child, then it may well be that they wish to suppress that situation and that feeling to such an extent that they actually forget it, purely because within their religious group, to have been raped was actually something which would exclude them from any marriage in the whole of their life.
And I'd like to say thank you for anyone who may have just joined us on Spirit's Work. You're listening to Spirit Guide Gregory Hay being channeled by Deep Trance Medium Mick Avery. I'm Sylvie Avery, and we're talking about hypnosis and regression. And if you'd like to join us with a question related to our subject, then the phone lines are open and we'd love to hear from you. Number to call in the US, is and they're toll-free, it's 877-876-5227. And from Canada, 888-810-8322. Okay. Well, I believe next week we're going to move on to past life regression, aren't we? But
yes.
Today we thought we'd stick to
the pure scientific factual basis.
Absolutely, yes.
And yes.
Can anybody be hypnotized, would you say?
I would say it is possible for most people to be hypnotized eventually. It may well require several sessions to have that done to them. And it will really depend, of course, upon their barriers. They may well be aggressively nervous. They may well have been violated, perhaps, in such a way, or maybe not. Maybe it is to do with some other aggression scenario, which therapy in the long term needs to bring out to perhaps then help certain psychiatrists to evaluate and to help that person to come to terms and perhaps alter their states of energy that they are unleashing upon others.
Well, what form of hypnosis would you say is the correct way or the most successful way, and you know, vice versa? What ways do you disagree with?
Well, no, I will not say that I disagree with any particular ways.
Okay.
It is really whatever works best for for the individual. After all, people use pendulums, people use all kinds of different things, in, even just to do with the voice and the manner of the voice, to allow the person to slip into the subconscious state. Mm-hmm. And either or any of these will actually possibly help the patient to be able to bring to the surface certain situations. As I say, after all, do not forget that some of these situations may actually be have been quite damaging to the patient, and therefore perhaps it may well be it brings about extreme forms of anxiety.
Can it be dangerous on any level?
It can be, yes. Most certainly it can be dangerous, perhaps because if the patient is suffering from some form of chronic dis-ease, or perhaps has a respiratory failure possibility, or circulatory failure possibility, or something like that.
Or anxiety, extreme anxiety.
Absolutely, yes, of course. And extreme anxiety can bring about failures in other events of the various systems within the physical body.
Because it does seem to be practiced by, lots of people, and there doesn't seem to be a clear, certificate or whatever, or recommendation from anywhere, not really.
No, well, quite so. As I say, some people will use quite different methods, and really it is, I suppose, about how the actual methodology is created and what scientific basis you are looking at to be involved with in your life, if that is what you want to do, if that is the form of practice that you want to create in order to help other people. Now, I have to say that for many people, of course, in therapy or that kind of thing, much of it is to do with paraphrasing. Much of it is really to do with just listening to the person to actually explore their hidden thoughts and meanings within their conscious state. It doesn't mean to say that all forms of therapy are to do with absolute hypnosis. It may well be that some forms of it are really to do with allowing the patient to talk out their aggression or their fears or their concerns, their situations in their whole life experience.
Yes, more of a counselling. I mean,
there are
qualifications. There are lots of varying things, but they all seem to differ and disagree. And, I mean, I've been on the internet for days now trying to find out, you know, exactly who's supposed to know what they're talking about. And I think there's two different types of the clinical therapists, psychologists, psychiatrists, and then there's the new age movement therapists, holistic therapists, and that sort of thing.
Yes.
And I suppose they do differ, and they're bound to clash. But
of course, obviously, for obvious reasons, one group will rubbish the other group, purely because they want to gain the clientele that the other group has messed up with, or whatever, or whichever way around it is. Yes, quite so. In the spirit world, of course, we do not actually have quite the same problems as you have in the physical world, because to a large extent, we are actually able to see and view the situation of that person's life and the situation around them, because it is within their aura, so that we can see it and observe it. We can perhaps tell then that if a particular patient is being obstructive, perhaps with what they are saying or something like that, then we will perhaps ask them to retire back to wherever it was that they were locked in, perhaps to think some more about their situation. So then leaving them to the choice of whether they wish to unravel it or not. But obviously, because of the fact that we can observe very often some of the deep-seated roots of problem that people may have from their physical life experience, means that we can most certainly help them a great deal more than perhaps you are able to do in the physical world.
So, for instance, what about if somebody has a split personality? Can you find that out through hypnosis and regression?
Well, possibly so. It depends upon why the person has a split personality and if it is actually a psychological disorder or whether it is something else. After all, you may be aware that, I'm sure that you are, Little Bird, that there are some people who actually have a form of split personality which is actually to do with either a form of attachment or something like that from the spirit world.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, there will be others who perhaps have a kind of a Jekyll and Hyde approach to their life.
Yes.
Perhaps even seeming to be in a form of bipolar swell from one form of degree of well-being to a different form of degree of well-being. And that, of course, is something which is clinically obvious in their routine of how they go about their daily life and what situations they're able to cope with. That is not necessarily anything to do with an attachment or any other form of offing from the spirit world. That is actually a completely physical personality trait disorder, which has to be dealt with through different forms of medication and care.
Well, yes, well, an ordinary therapist probably 9 times out of 10 wouldn't know about attachments anyway, would they?
No, quite so. Absolutely, I understand that. But it doesn't mean to say either, and I'm not suggesting either, that those people who are suffering from such bipolar incidences in their lives have attachments. I'm not suggesting that for one moment, although, of course, every single case is individual. Perhaps that is also something which ought to be more appreciated by those of scientific medicine and the practice, who bring about the practice of psychiatry, and how it is that they evaluate a patient, that there is actually this possibility of situations from beyond the physical state of life.
Absolutely.
Which can have an influence upon the patient.
Yes, and we've done shows on that.
Yes.
If you'd like to join us with a question, don't forget you can still phone in. It's toll free in the US, 877-876-5227. In Canada, it's 888-810-8322. And we're talking about hypnosis and regression. What about dreams, actually? Does this fall into this category? I mean, how do dreams, say, for instance, affect somebody's hypnosis? Can that creep in there somewhere?
Of course, yes. It is possible that a person's dreams or nightmares or the situations that they come to in whilst they are asleep are not necessarily things that they actually experience. And I understand that for many people it may be difficult for them to unravel what it is they are really experiencing or what it is to suggestive memory of their subconscious and conscious state. I understand the difficulty that people have in trying to come to terms with situations which appear to be so completely at odds with perhaps how they are able to record things in the matter of what they can see, what they can hear, and what they can sense within their whole being. For example, you can have a person who dreams perhaps or in repeated ways about being perhaps molested by a certain person or group of people, or perhaps even being beheaded or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Some ghastly, garish scenario which is played out within the consciousness is not necessarily, does not mean at all that that has happened in some previous life experience. It doesn't mean either necessarily that they have actually been in some other altercation, in some different identity of a different universe or a different parameter. It doesn't mean to say that this is something from some previous experience that you have had, but that possibly what is occurring is that you have all of this situation of your conscious mind and what you have brought in your day. Think for a moment about all of the media, television programs that you have watched, all of those different scenarios that you may have been a witness to in those observations of media programs, and think for a moment of how these situations are actually affecting you in a conscious living way.
Okay, hello, caller.
Hello, hi, Sylvie. This is John. How are you doing?
Hello, Finn.
Gregory. Gregory, could you please tell us about personality disorders that might be in pets and animals, cats and dogs?
Oh, yeah.
And how could we prevent this, and what can we look for to see if this is starting to happen? Thank you.
Yes, thank you, friend. Of course, some of the obvious personality disorders which come about is in animals, particularly perhaps those held in captivity, are the obvious ones of polar bears weaving backwards and forwards and that kind of thing. Even horses do it. And I'm afraid to say that pigs do it as well as cows. And various creatures who have been in certain forms of captivity will display certain forms of behavior because of their captivity. Perhaps they are not displaced well. Perhaps their sensitivities need them to be out in open fields or that kind of thing. And you would usually find that form of behavior completely disappears when they are having a sense of freedom, even if that sense of freedom is only short-lived. Now, perhaps then with dogs and cats and that kind of thing, cats, as you know, have their own shelf life, as it were. They have their own experience and will really only marginally participate in anyone else's life. So therefore, if you have a cat, know that it is only after its own experience. It is not really interested in your experience. Whereas a dog, on the other hand, is completely attentive to your experience and wants to serve your every need. That is because, by doing that, it is gaining love from you, that wonderful universal energy of all life. And that is something that dogs actually happen to crave, purely because of their disposition and their willingness to serve. They're wanting to be a part of the pack. And of course, for you, as a human being, you are a leader of the pack, which means that they want to suck up to you. They want to be as your servant, quite simply, because in that way, in exactly the same way as they would have behaved in a pack of wolves, by doing that, they manage to complete the harmony picture they desire, which is the harmony picture of subservience and love. The problem that you have with dogs, particularly those held in captivity, those who perhaps have psychological difficulties, possibly to do with their behavior, which springs from their genetics, their species, or type or form, that perhaps they have been bred to a certain extent to be aggressive, or that kind of thing. And I feel that that is something which human beings have to take notice of in the way that certain breeds are constantly kept.
Was there a particular animal with a personality disorder that you wanted to know about, John?
I was just curious about cats and dogs.
Cats and dogs.
That's very interesting about the difference between cats and dogs.
Yeah.
Yes, well, and of course, as you may or may not know, that cats can actually shapeshift, so they aren't necessarily here all of the time in any event, because they are able to cross over to different dimensions at will at times. Although I would have to say that only certain cats are able to do this usually of the either Egyptian form of variety, short hair, Asian type of cat.
Okay.
No, the cats and dogs have spirit guides. I have to ask that now. Now I'm curious.
Sorry, I didn't catch that, John. Neither of us did.
I'm sorry. Now I got curious, but do cats and dogs have spiritual guides like people do?
Do they have spiritual guides, friend? Well, I would have to say that many animals of a particularly conscious state as that certainly do have ancestors who walk with them. And also, you will have perhaps situations where, shall we say, a physical human family has a number of different dogs over their lifetime. And the dog that you have now, perhaps, will recognize when the spirit of the dog of the past in the family group comes to visit. And so there will be situations when it looks and appears as though the dog is actually talking to someone or listening to someone. As you know, you may not know, that dogs and cats are both spiritually aware, so they are able to define and understand when a being from the spirit world, whoever it is in the room, is in their area, in their aura, or even perhaps somewhere else in the room. So, and very often, dogs can possibly, and cats, of course, as well, can possibly have or be responsible for orbs of energy and that kind of thing. It isn't just human activity that is responsible for that, but dogs and cats can do that as well once they have passed to our side of life.
Gregory, did you used to have any cats or dogs?
Did I used to have a dog, friend?
A cat or a dog?
A cat or a dog. No, I never really had one, not personally. I had a pet rat, or mouse, rather, sorry, a mouse that actually came in from the fields that I used to feed when I lived in West House, and I used to feed it little pieces of bread and things like that. It actually lived in a crevice in the wall, and it would come out every now and then because I slept on the floor on straw in those days when I lived with my father, John Hay, and that was actually my own little pet, I suppose. My father didn't actually know about it at all, and it was only there for a couple of years. I don't believe that they survive for very long. So that was the only pet that I ever had, friend.
So you mean you didn't see your little mouse back in the spirit world when you got there?
I have not actually re-met him, no, now that you come to mention it.
You'll have to go and search him out.
Well, I will, yes. I didn't actually have a name for him either.
Okay, John.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Faye.
Thanks for calling.
You too.
That's great. That's funny. Okay, well, we've virtually come to time anyway, Gregory. But
yes.
So as I was saying, that next Monday, we're going to be taking it a step further and taking a walk through past life regression.
Yes, Faye.
And having a little discussion about that. So don't forget, everybody, do phone us up. And if you have a question in the week that you can think of, then just send us an email, enq@spirit-teaching.com. You know, not everybody's into phoning.
No, quite so.
If you'd rather email, and then I can write the question down and ask it for you.
You can do that.
Okay. Well, thanks, Gregory. Wonderful.
Absolutely so. With love and light, as always, friend. Be continually a part of your journey and your understanding.
Thank you.
With love, we leave you.
Bye. And we hope you've enjoyed the show. I'd just like to mention our website again. It's spirit-teaching.com, and you can find out information about us, our books, our CDs, and our shows. You can also purchase them from bookstores and at amazon.com. as well as Spirit's work on the wonderful bbsradio.com on Mondays and Thursdays. We also have another radio show, which is Spirit Teaching, on artistverse.com on Tuesdays. My name is Sylvie Avery, and you've been listening to Spirit's work. And until next time, be peaceful, be positive, and focused on your goal, knowing that you're not alone in trying to create a better world.